This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider on a Thursday here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. And since it's a little bit after 9 o'clock on a Thursday, that means it's time for the MGO Blog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. You know how we do it on the MGO Blog Roundtable every single Thursday, 9 o'clock hour. The crew minus Ed Fang. I don't know.
I have an alibi.
For him?
No, for me.
I thought you meant for his disappearance.
No.
I mean, you're on work release today. I don't know. It's
we got the first voice you heard was Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning.
Morning.
And, of course, Craig Ross.
Howdy.
Whose name just, you keep popping up. Anytime we talk Michigan basketball all over. And it's like, oh, well, Craig said he's the best center in Michigan history. He happened to, it was a bad matchup the other night for him.
Wrong.
You don't think it was a bad matchup for him?
No, he wasn't matched up against him.
For a while.
I watched the game last night, slow-mo'd it. I was up till 2 a.m. watching it slow. There were, Stevens took 11 shots while Teske was guarding him for a sum total of 7 points. Is that good?
Yeah, like
11 shots, 7 points. I don't think that's very good.
So Michigan sent Stevens the line 10 times in the last 2.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And before that, he had like 17 points on 20 shots or something. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah, they did a better job in the second half on him than the first half to do.
But it wasn't. It wasn't Teske, though, because when Teske guarded him, he had him locked down.
He had a couple of baskets.
He had a couple of baskets, but he's a good player. He's going to get a couple baskets, and so that's one of the weird sort of things that sort of gets said during games, and then somehow it becomes its own reality. Yeah. The prior game, Wisconsin, Lavin. Did you hear Lavin at halftime? He said
they need to go to a zone.
Exactly. They need to go to a zone. Wisconsin scored 27 points in the first half, and all of a sudden Michigan needs to go to this non-existent zone that they hadn't played a second zone until... I played one possession.
They played one possession of it.
Yeah.
I hear there's Ed Fang.
Yeah.
Who joins us. But Stevens had himself a day. This Dredd guy. Did you guys know about Judge Dredd or whatever his name is before that game?
Well, I know that 80% of his shots are threes. And usually Michigan knows that too. And he gets 8 wide open looks. Yeah. I don't know what happened there, because it's not like they were running great action, mm-hmm. like to get the guy open. He was just open. And I mean, you know, kind of have one of these games where, you know, kind of felt like everybody hit themselves in the head with a frying pan before they walked out on the court.
It's a good line.
And I struggle to explain it, because Michigan's the number 2 team in the country at preventing threes from going up,
which is a skill.
And they're really, really good at that. And Dredd is not a guy who you need Dredd. To leave. Because all he does is shoot threes.
Yeah, he's not putting it on the.
He's not putting it on the deck. And they're not forcing rotations. And they're not.
Hey, that guy does not want to go to the free throw line.
Right. He's got 19 on the season. So, like, what happened to the thing where everybody is always in that guy's face? So, I'm kind of at a loss.
Yeah, they weren't as it was a game where they weren't as dialed in, because I distinctly remember thinking a little bit later in the game where whoever it was, you watched the game last night, helped off of him. It's like, oh man, don't help off of that guy. And sure enough, he got the ball and nailed it 3.
Yeah, it was just like stuff that you normally don't see Michigan do. Just kind of lose their scouting reports, lose their heads, and just kind of like run around and not play with the discipline style that they've done all year.
There was also some weird stuff. I mean, let me quote Chairman Trotsky.
Well,
where have you gone, Ted Valentine? A nation turns its lonely eyes to you.
You and Ira Weintraub are kindred spirits.
I mean,
Ira, you suddenly think John Teske's better than Terry Mills? Are you thinking
I'm
about
not
over
saying
there?
That part, but I brought up two names. I said I brought up Teddy Valentine. I brought up Gene Steratore, both guys that are not officiating games this year. It's not that they were elite, but they were not bottom part of the Big Ten officials, and now you have lower-level officials that have to step up their game. And
well, it should say something. That John Beilein hasn't been thrown out of a game in 40 years. I think
it was really weird that he just lost it at that point. Because, like, I didn't think that there were a ton of – like, there was a bad foul. Like, he was right about the Simpson call. But, like, I didn't –
so
I wasn't mad
and he's
about
protecting his guy with I completely get.
I think at the time – and I haven't talked to him about this. So this is speculating. I'm speculating like you guys. But I saw the guy lean in with his shoulder. At least I felt like I did. And X gets de-cleated. And so he goes to protest at halftime, that call. And I think maybe he thought, as John Beilein, who doesn't go all Tom Izzo on refs, I'm going to get a little latitude. And when he got teed up, I think it kind of took him aback a bit. And then when he gets threatened, then when he gets tossed, that's when you see him, like, you know, the incredulity is just, like, oozing from John Beilein. It's like, you're going to throw me. I haven't been thrown out in Division I basketball. I've been thrown out in 40 years, and you're going to throw me out of a game. I just felt like at that time, you got Saidy Washington kind of Coach B moved back. Where was the other official getting on the guy that threw John Beilein? I'll say, man, look, you gave your message
I know the tech. I know the answer to this. Lewis Garrison, because I watched it, Lewis Garrison was wandering around at the middle of the court. And Beilein, when he got tossed, was at least 40 feet away from that ref. And the ref was sort of moving one way. Beilein had his back to him and was walking away when the guy comes running to the middle of the court and then tosses.
He turned around and says something.
He had his back to him, but he turned over his shoulder.
He turned around and put up three fingers.
Right.
To indicate the number of calls that he thought the dude had missed.
Right. And that was...
And that's what gets you thrown.
Exactly. Right.
And
exactly.
I think it was... I'm not sure if it was Selk or was... it was the other guy.
They're both like buzz cuts.
Yeah.
It's bad news when a ref has a buzz cut. When a ref has Brad Davidson's haircut, you're in for a bad time.
It was Rob Riley, who's... I mean, and this is my point. You end up with a couple of C-minus refs when you could have got... I mean, Steratore just retired, but who was an A-minus rep, and you have a B-plus, A-minus guy like Valentine who's now gone because the conference doesn't like the fact that he's
showed
dramatic.
Up
and so what?
I mean,
so what? He was a good ref and is still a good ref, and
turns his back on Joel Berry when Joel Berry just wants to talk to him during a game.
I don't care about that. Izzo from time to time too. I appreciated that about Ted.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a good ref.
One ref is not going to change anything.
No, but when you
But like why
clean out the cupboard of the good refs you've got?
Well, I just disagree entirely with you that Brad Valentine is a good ref.
No, you're wrong.
I'll bring out the analogy again. If you got two piles of crap and one pile is just a little bit lower, you spray potpourri on it, it smells a little bit better.
Give me the
less smelly pile of crap.
The guy who has the dance routine every time he calls a charge is not a good ref.
Well, but you see, that's style. Antics. That's style, right?
But that's not
the substance of his call.
No, I don't want to get into it anymore.
I mean, I feel like stupid. I've just personally been broken by the referees, like the Wisconsin game, stuff that happened in that game.
See, like Kicked out after Ethan Happ's 63rd foul. All right, I understand that, but like, you know, I was like, all right, that was a bad call, but I was a little surprised that like he lost it at that point.
That was dreadful enough.
When did he really lose it? And lose it for John Beilein is relative, right? It's like, give me a break. I think you threw me out for putting up three fingers. Are you serious? You're throwing me out of the game?
Maybe he said fudge.
even if he said that, you're throwing me out of a game for that?
Gosh darn it.
Come on, man.
No, but just like think about the trajectory of what we've seen in the last two games. 50 fouls on Ethan Happ in the first half, not even get called. And when I actually got broken was when they didn't call the walk on Happ in the second half, where he clearly took a couple steps before coming in, and then he pushed, I think, Teske in the back. And I was like, all right, I can't waste my energy on these people
anymore. It's funny.
Like, it's
a friend of mine, and I'll show you, we were texting during the game, so I'm sitting there and I'm watching Ethan Happ play hockey on the basketball court, right? It's like, this. What is going on?
There are rules against high sticking in hockey.
What's going on where Ethan Happ can just do whatever he wants?
Exactly. That's what that game was.
On the floor.
And it's so remarkable that he didn't have a good second half, right?
A friend of mine who is a Michigan football guy who knows Terry Weimer, he's like, oh, Terry's letting him play. Letting him play what sport? What sport is he letting him play right now? This is not basketball. What he's letting him do out there. Ethan Happ had 27 fouls by the time he got his second one.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, like, that's the point where I'm just on Twitter apologizing to people because they can talk about nothing else, that Ethan Happ, for whatever reason, is allowed to play whatever, just do whatever he wants. At that point, if I'm John Beilein and I'm a volcano on the sideline, that makes total sense.
So, Connor, are you equally as frustrated as, say, Iggy's second foul when he literally did not touch the guy and they blow the whistle?
I mean, that was
well, but that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Like you just have to expect this now. Like, I mean, can you go into a Big Ten game and be like, oh, I think the refs are going to be okay?
Well, that's why if you're John Beilein, you go to the hat because you accept that the ineptitude of referees is a given.
Yep.
So you got to lobby. You got to state your case. You got to condition the refs to kind of give you your share of the calls. And so you go do that, and then you throw me out of a game for the first time in 40 years? Yep. John Beilein? Yep. That ought to say something to the Big Ten. I'll look at that as like, man, something wrong with the refs. Not with John Beilein. And so this characterization. And it's not just you, Brian, but they were talking about it on the broadcast. John Beilein just lost it. Hell, the ref lost it. The ref was to me the culprit there. If you want to talk about who really lost it, John Beilein has gone spotless in 40 years when it comes to something like that.
And it was halftime. The ref could have walked away.
Yeah.
You know, the ref could have just walked away and he didn't have to hang around and look back.
If you're throwing out John Beilein for that, you're throwing Tom Izzo out of every freaking game.
Or Fran McCaffrey every 5 minutes.
Fran McCaffrey, Brad Underwood. Yeah. I mean, guys whose heads explode on a, you know, game by game basis.
Think about those 5 points that Penn State got. The layup. Layup and then the three foul shots at the beginning of the second half, mm-hmm. right? And I mean,
that was my point.
I hate to say that, you know, this play affected the outcome of the game, but like, you know, somehow those,
it had an impact.
It impacted the end game situation.
The way I phrased it was we were deprived of the second half we should have seen. It should have started at 38-27 and played from there with John Beilein on the sideline, and we never got to see the second half that we should have seen.
Well, you know what was telling to me was in the post game when talking to John Beilein, who is always willing to be deferential to refs. He's always talking about, mm-hmm. hey, they have a tough job, and you know that call could have went either way, or even I was wrong. This time he said, no, we have some interesting conversations coming up about what I can possibly do better there. Right. So he wasn't saying I was wrong, you know, that I lost my cool. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
He said, we have some conversations we have to have.
Well,
and
he had an hour to think about it, too, right? Like, that's not right at halftime.
Right, exactly. So
that
said a lot.
People brought that up to me on Twitter, and I was surprised.
So
not saying he's wrong. Reacting like that, but
so your takeaways. I think it's important to not, you know, blow out of proportion. You know, the meaning of one win or one loss. And Michigan was 1-1 last week. They beat Wisconsin at home in Michigan. Wisconsin, who I thought at that coming off of that game, it's like, I mean, it looks like the second best team to me in the league. Then they go and lose to Michigan State. And then at home. And then the loss to Penn State. So what if anything? Does last week say to you about Michigan?
I mean, to me, not much, one way or the other. I mean, I had written myself a question before the most recent game, and it was, how can a team be 22-2 and be such a pedestrian shooting team? It was a question to myself. How come we're 22-2 and a team that really doesn't shoot the ball all that well?
Well, I don't think we're pedestrian. I think we're a little bit above average. And like, given
that
John Beilein's history,
the definition of pedestrian.
Given John Beilein's history, it seems a lot worse than what we actually are. And clearly, the last couple of games haven't been great.
What pedestrian means?
Hey, look, it was bound to happen.
It seems worse given the history of this program
between Brian and
I'm just saying.
I'm not disagreeing with you, man.
All right.
So what about you know, obviously Charles has found his way found his way out of a shooting slump. Any concern about Jordan Poole and his 3-point shooting right now?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. What do you want me to say about that?
Yeah, yes. Was it for 14? I think
I like it better when he hits them. Yeah. I mean,
I guess you know. I know you guys look at the film over and over again. How many of his shots are just bad shots?
Versus
open shots that he isn't knocking down. Like if he's missing a bunch of open shots, then the concern is much greater than if you just got to keep drilling into a man. Your shot selection needs to get better.
I mean, I thought I had like 2 eye rolls in this game.
Yeah.
And he took great. He took like what, 16 shots. Mm-hmm. So like that's not too bad. Like sometimes, yeah. Like I would get like to get down to 1 eye roll, but you know.
So would Elon probably.
He's coming off screens and going up straight, and I think that's fine. I want him to put him in more pick and roll action because if you drop on him, he can just pull up, and that's a good shot. Like I think that, you know, for the most part, he's, you know, his eye roll shots are, I think, overstated, and they are present, but I don't think they're like a majority.
So he's gotten better in that regard. You know, I think if you talk about putting him in more pick and roll action, at times we've seen him. You know, I think if anything, what they're looking at is, you know, his ability as a passer in that scenario. Yeah. And I actually think he's shown better passing ability. Yeah. Why not? Right.
Yeah. Well, and he can do that Stauskas stuff, which is how you really like complicate people's lives on those coverages. So like maybe he's not all there yet, but I kind of feel like early in the game, if you can get him on in a pick and roll and have him rise up. Like off the dribble with an open shot, I think that's a good shot and might get him like activated.
I'm a little more concerned than that. I mean, he's shooting 32% in the Big Ten from three. It's not good. By comparison, John Teske is 39%.
Come on, man, that's a small sample size.
Well, it's a whole season.
No, it's half a season.
No, it's the whole Big Ten season.
How many threes has John Teske taken?
Teske is 12 of 31, and Poole is 26 of 81. So the sample size isn't that small.
It's small.
It's small-ish, and so. I'm concerned. The other thing is his shot choice is concerned. I mean, last night it's 50. We're after the debacle. We're down 52-47 with 11:54 on the clock. We have the ball, and he just hoists up a terrible three. And you know that's a key moment of the game. Of course, I actually thought the officiating was worse in half two than half one. There's a moment where we're down, I think, 4, maybe 5. We steal the ball, and X is fouled twice. And then finally he's flattened, and the ball goes rolling out. They get a layup the other way.
Or the double dribble that they...
Well, then there was the ridiculous double dribble. I mean, that's like an eighth grade ref gets that one right. So, it's just a maddening game, but you can't kill yourself by taking bad threes early in the clock, which that was. And so, yeah, I'm maybe more concerned.
I mean, if that's yes, that was an eye rolling worthy shot.
Yeah,
but it's one of 16. Yeah,
yeah. I hear what you're saying.
His shot selection.
He's got to shoot.
Has
the ball.
Improved.
If Michigan's going to win, he has to be shooting the ball. And Livers has to. I think Livers should be shooting it more.
Yeah, I did too.
Well, and Brazdeikis has had 4 shots in this game. And I know he sat for a stretch of that game, but like he needs to have more than 4 shots. And you look over his last 4 games, you know, the only solid game he had was Rutgers, where he's essentially had shooting practice from behind the 3-point line, given Rutgers' defense. So, I mean, I'm more worried about Brazdeikis. I think he needs to get more shots. He needs to be more involved. And I hope to see
This was purely a function, though, of the foul trouble, right?
I don't know, purely. 4 shots in however many minutes he played?
He played three in 9 minutes in the first half, and then he sat.
I think he played like 17 minutes
game.
He hardly played in this contest.
That's interesting. Okay, so we sat that much of the second half. Still, 4 shots, right? Like, yeah, I want him taking minutes. More shots. And
we have to get to a break. Phone lines are open at 734-998-1050. Again, 734-998-1050. Back on the other side here. on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. So I got to give a shout out to my man Zeke on Twitter. We go back and forth on a lot of different topics, but that literally is my guy. You know, I like to get with him when we go down to Atlanta, but we disagree on a great many things, including Xavier Simpson. He thinks that I just refuse to say anything bad about X. If X doesn't have a great game, I won't say it. He is, without question, one of my favorite all-time Wolverines. But if he has a bad game, I'll say it. He had a bad game against Penn State.
Well,
yeah. Six turnovers.
Although a couple of them weren't.
I mean, that's
true. They were
true.
Sort of combo mistakes. There was the play to Livers where Livers didn't really cut the lane right, I don't think.
Well, but my problem is not necessarily with anything that showed up in the box score, but Michigan, they faced this 1-2-2 three-quarter court trap the whole game. And it takes X like 28 minutes to even like go at it. And he gets an and one for Teske, and it's a bucket, and he tries to do it again. And he gets fouled like 65 times and gets knocked over, and that's not his fault. That turnover was not on him. That's just the refs committing a horrible malpractice. But you can't stop going after that press. And they were able to force Michigan to use up 10 seconds of shot clock.
Every time.
And then after they got across the timeline, they just kind of
tranced.
It was like they didn't realize that they had lost those 8 seconds to get across the timeline, and they just went at their usual rate. So sometimes they weren't getting into an action until there were 10 seconds left on the shot clock. And they made shots in this game, but if they, you know, if I mean, they managed to get over a point per possession, but if I was watching that game and I'm a Big Ten coach, that's what I'm doing to Michigan.
Yeah, well, you know, we got a call on this, I think it was yesterday, may have been the day before, and they were talking about, you know, the press and how, you know, Michigan just kept going at a slow rate. Now, the kind of pressure that Penn State was applying wasn't turnover type pressure. It was more exactly what they got Michigan to do.
Yeah.
We want you to be in your offense or in your action in late shot clock situations. And so kudos to them. I expect that to be, if there is one big takeaway from this game, I would expect it to be for Michigan to be, okay, well, we're going to make sure that we got this down, because it's a copycat. You know, other teams will try to break it out at times, try to slow down your pace to make sure that they don't
occasionally, and it's the same thing every time. And I've been wondering for years why more teams don't try to do it to Michigan, because what they do is they go into it's clear that when they practice going up against this kind of press, they expect to be having 8-point lead with a minute left. So just getting it across the timeline and scoring is completely beside the point. So I think they need to change their philosophy there.
I mean, I think Brian's right on the money on this. I mean, we were way too deliberate attacking that, and they weren't trapping, as you pointed. There wasn't a trap on it. It was just, we're going to slow you down. And then when we got across the timeline or the half-court line, we took a big collective breath, did nothing for 4 or 5 seconds, and then there's 10 or 12, 13 seconds on the clock before they start their offense. And that had to be attacked more aggressively. The one time they did, we got the N1 with Teske. And then we got the knockover that wasn't called. But I don't quite understand what Michigan was doing against it. I mean, it was way too turtle-paced.
Bad game.
Very bad game. Forget about it.
They happened. Yeah, it was already pointed out. I was pointed out during the broadcast. Michigan lost to Penn State in Happy Valley in 2013. Not to say that the same outcome this season, they're going to reach the same, they reached the same heights this season. We hope they do. But it does offer a little perspective here that it's one game, a bad game. Teams are going to have bad games. As great as it would have been to be in sole possession of first place, it could be worse, right? So we're still talking about a team tied for first place, thanks to Maryland, the team that Michigan plays next, knocking off Purdue.
Yeah. I mean, Maryland's a talented team. I know Ira's kind of cringing at the coaching over there, but they have some talent on that team.
They're a really talented team, and I've said it every time that I'm not impressed with the coach. He can eventually, it would be nice to see him prove me wrong, and maybe this year will be the year, but, well, no comment on the game on Saturday, but it's a But it's more about what happens. Not even what happens on Saturday, or it's what happens in March with, you know, in general with them. Right. But they are really young. They have, what, six freshman contributors. I think KenPom has them as, like, the bottom five youngest teams in America. But they're long. They're athletic. They can rebound. They can play some defense. They have some shooters on the floor. So they present a lot of trouble. They're not that well coached.
Yeah, yeah. And their freshman came up really big for them in the victory over Purdue, which leads me back to Michigan. Just you guys' take on there's a kind of the expectation of fans at this point in the season for Michigan's freshmen that have gotten spotty, minutes. It's kind of, their expectations have kind of been lowered dramatically. Like, if we haven't seen it by now, we aren't going to see anything from those guys. I'm not to that point. I'm not to the point of believing that Brandon Johns is past the point of being able to, help Michigan. And I frankly, even with John talking up Eli Brooks last week, I'm still not to the point where I believe that all hope is lost for Dave DeJulius helping them at some point this year.
I mean, there are minutes there. They only play six guys really consistently, and then Brooks is a seventh, and if Brooks takes a shot, it's like, oh, that's weird. So,
Yeah, he hit one against Penn State, right?
He did.
A little 15-footer?
But when that went in, I was like, oh, that's weird. So
that he shot,
that's good.
Right, like he off the dribble from like 15 feet, I was like, that was not what I was expecting on that particular offensive possession. And especially for this team, it would be nice to have someone who could impersonate a microwave off the bench. Take some shots, hit some shots.
You brought up, and I thought it was a great point. Jaron Simmons gave them good minutes at times, and there was a game late in the season where he actually was kind of an offensive.
It was the Montana game, the first game of the tournament. Like, he scored the only 2 points of the first half. That was 2-0 at half, and he scored both of those points. People do kind of emerge late. We saw McGarry emerge late. We've seen Walton kind of blow up in the second half of the season. So I wouldn't necessarily write those freshmen off, but it would be like, we gotta start getting some time.
You guys are big, and we've talked about this before, but you guys are big Castleton proponents at this point.
Well, I just feel like if there's someone coming off the bench who I feel is going to be a plausibly good defender at the five, it's him, and he's the only one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I wouldn't want to say a Castleton proponent. I would want to say, and I asked, as I mentioned last week, Beilein about this in his press conference, and he sort of trolled me in a very clever way. But the thing is that, there also are people who are gamers. There are people who don't necessarily perform all that well.
He mentioned that. He said, I know there are gamers. I haven't seen him game,
but the last time we saw Castleton, even though it was for 2 minutes or something, he did game. And so, of the freshmen, I think he's the one who, aside from Iggy, when he's been on the floor, has shown something. And so it might be worth a shot. So I'm with Brian, at least that if anyone might have some potential to do something.
Yeah, it's so tough with the schedule they have left.
Yeah, very tough.
That's the thing. I mean, you almost have to be willing to concede that it's going to cost you at times, and maybe the short term, deficiencies that they are on the court could lead to some long-term positive impact.
Maryland in particular, I don't know how you can go to anyone except Castleton for backup minutes at the five, because Fernando and Smith are not being covered by Brandon Johns, who's a four. Like, those guys are
right,
large.
Right, but isn't Fernando exactly the kind of big guy that you don't want banging against Castleton?
Well, he's actually more of a modern NBA center. He's not like the bubble butt like Nick Ward, where he's just 280 pounds.
But he's a load.
How are you going to challenge that guy's shots? Probably by trying to block him. And Castleton is the only guy who really brings that to him.
That particular matchup, I think, and without being in practice, I'm just speculating.
I'm more thinking about Jalen Smith, because it'll be testy on Fernando, but Jalen Smith is more of
I hear you on that.
Perimeter guy.
Yeah, I hear you on that. But on Bruno Fernando, you aren't putting...
I'm not, but when there are minutes that you have to take Teske off the floor, who's going to get them against that team?
It's probably going to be Johns, right? Given what we've seen from Beilein the last couple games.
And you hope, I don't know what's happening in practice, but...
And you hope that he can hold up physically. And he's actually given you already this year one of the kinds of showings that I'm talking about. That once in a blue moon, you need a guy to give you a boost off the bench. He did that against Wisconsin.
Against 6'4" Juwan Morgan.
He's not 6'4".
Juwan Morgan is 6'4".
He's not 6'4".
He's 6'7".
Juwan Morgan is 6'2".
Okay.
And he's a good player, but he's 6 foot tall.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com. So how do your power rankings in conference look now? In light of what we've seen, now Wisconsin has lost a couple of games in a row. I was pretty high on them even after the loss to Michigan, but I expected them to be able to beat Michigan State at home, and they obviously couldn't do that.
I mean, there's numbers, and then there's what these teams actually are. Like, absorbing Michigan State and Wisconsin over the last week, I feel Michigan is the best team in this league. They play their best. I mean, Michigan State's a slightly better shooting team, but like... Michigan has the most upside of any team in this conference, right? Like, I don't think there's any doubt about that. So if they play their game, they don't play like they did against Penn State, they're the best team in this conference. And you put Michigan State, Wisconsin somewhere. I mean, I think both those teams are limited in terms of their talent.
Well, so what State does is they really get down the floor very quickly. Mm-hmm. And they especially do that for post-ups. So that's why Ward only plays 20 minutes a game, because he has to run his ass off to get down there and get really deep post position for their offense to really click. I feel like they're a pretty good matchup for Michigan, because you can put Z on Winston and kind of get his game all gunked up, and then if they're not able to run, and Michigan's very good at preventing people from running, I think they'll be kind of in a shock to the system a little bit.
Right, and then Michigan's going to be good at defending the three too, which is... I mean, they need to shoot well. I mean, they're just shooting close to 39% on the year.
Yeah.
So if they can't get their threes off, like, I like our chances against them. I mean, we've seen Michigan against Wisconsin. I think Happ is great, but no one else on that team really scares me. And then so on and
Purdue.
So forth. Purdue's good, but they're also, they're like 50th at defense numbers, and that was before the Maryland debacle. Like, they're not great on defense.
They run the Philadelphia 76ers offense when AI was there, except they don't have AI.
right.
Well, I don't think that's fair. That was maybe like early season, but after Trevion Williams emerged, they have another guy who can.
Did you not watch the Maryland game?
For 26 in that game.
Okay, but
Trevion chucking.
Okay. Wait, you're talking about Edwards?
I was talking about Carson Edwards. Yeah, Edwards was chucking.
Yeah, but that's what Carson Edwards has to do in the context of that team. But
that's AI.
But Trevion Williams is not going to go up against Bruno Fernando as a true freshman and be able to get off shots. Against a lot of the league, he has. Like, he was really good in the Michigan State game. He was really good in Wisconsin game. I don't remember exactly which. But when he's on the floor, they kind of have a different aspect to them. And so he's been one of the midseason emergences in the Big Ten. I think it's been a big difference for them.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here with a snit of paranoia, not thinking about any of that. I'm thinking about who is going to get assigned in the Maryland game.
Yeah.
And that's a good point.
And I'll bet $100 we get the best two refs in the league, Oglesby and Borowski, in this game, and they'll call a completely neutral game against Maryland.
Don't they got, yeah. They can,
and we'll never see those guys on the road.
Wait,
we're never going to see the good refs on the road.
They can decide those ref assignments this late, given travel and all
that? I have no idea, but no. I think I'll bet $100 right now we get either one of Bo Borowski or Terry Oglesby.
Here's where I really, and Craig, I think you were the first guy I heard really study the refs and right. their track record and how they've called. You were the first one to really delve deep into that. And that's like
the fifth time you watched a game. It was like, what else are you going to watch?
But it is so a part of what I think is at issue with officiating. I understand
it's hard.
It's hard. I get it. But my problem with this age old approach to, hey, refs are just, they're human. Human error. They're part of the game. You don't blame referees for losses. Everyone else on the field is accountable. Everyone else on the field, you know their trade. You know how many interceptions the quarterback threw. You know what he did in the last game. You know what Jim Harbaugh's career record against, career Big Ten record and record in bowl games. You know all those things. But the officials somehow have this... They have this anonymity,
and in hockey, it's even worse because now they've taken the names off the or off the back of the jerseys. You don't even know who they are.
Right. So when you get in a game, you just see officials. You don't know if this official sucked his last game. Sucked the last time he called the Michigan game. They say, oh well, they're accountable internally. That's not the same kind of accountability everyone else has.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly right. One of the interesting things Beilein said. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
The problem with that is you still remember the travel and the Pistons game that went viral?
Yes, five steps. Yes, Brad Beal.
And then the official NBA referee's account was
defended
like, he fumbled it, so that's completely legal. And I'm like, dude, you can just do this all the way down the court? And everybody on Twitter dragged him because that's the way it goes.
It's right. Right.
It's like, well, this is completely fine. It's like, if that's fine, the rule needs to be changed. Don't defend this.
That's a great point. We got to get to a break. Right. We'll pick it up on the other side.
No, that's all right.
We know. Craig, you kick us off when we come back on the other side here of the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios. Sam Webb, Brian Cook from MGO Blog, Ed Fang from the Power Rank, and Craig Ross, who I promise was start us off coming out of the break. You remember what point you were gonna?
I actually don't, but one thing that
the privilege of age.
Yeah, but one thing that sort of bothers me as a fan is what did Beilein say to these refs that got them so worked up? And we'll never know. Because he's never going to tell us, and he's never going to say what the response was.
Well, here's what I speculate. He said nothing that warranted him being ejected from that game.
That's my guess.
Why can I say that? He hasn't been thrown out of a game in 40 years.
That's true. But I also,
in 40 years.
He was pretty worked up. When
he was more worked
team.
Up after they tossed
after
him.
They tossed
That's
him.
True, too. But he was pretty worked up for John Beilein.
Like I said,
I'm worked up for Mr. Rogers, but I mean, and so it's
Mr. Rogers.
You know, remember Mr. Rogers?
I know who Mr. Rogers neighborhood. Is.
Well, for John Beilein to be sort of worked up isn't like 10 seconds of Fran McCaffrey.
You're right
on
you're
the
right.
sidelines. He's right, like no, ready to explode every second.
So. You know, they have like the Tiger now sings the song. It's weird because my kid's watching Daniel Tiger and he's like singing the song. I go, that's not your song. Anyway, we can continue talking about sports.
I have no idea. My kid is five. He watches a lot of shows. That's one he hasn't watched.
It's okay. Ubiquitous.
Okay, got it.
It's okay that he doesn't watch it.
Your kids watch it?
No, they're too old.
Yeah, they're a little old, but...
But he learns about his emotions, so he's like, I'm frustrated. Like, well, let me tell you, kiddo, been there very recently.
Hey, so what do you guys think of? We could close out with this. So, Michigan hockey, they play Notre Dame, and, of course, Brian Kelly goes all...
Oh, we're talking about Brian Kelly.
Yeah, a little smack talk. We could get Michigan hockey in there as well. What do you think about the... You know, it was some kind of relief for the audience. Did you get bent out of shape about it?
I can't do better than at Internet Raj, who's a great Twitter follow, who said, maybe you should stick to negligent homicide, coach.
That's where my thoughts went. And then I read that tweet, so I just hit heart and said, myself.
One is kind of like, all fun. The other one, it gets real serious.
I don't have a lot of fun with Brian Kelly.
Okay, I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see what the upside was for Kelly, but... Whatever.
Well, just get your shots in. You won. Yeah, get your shots in.
It's called pandering to your base.
To your crowd. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. How about Michigan hockey, though?
They're not going to the tournament unless they win the Big Ten tournament, which is kind of disappointing. But, you look at their forward core without Josh Norris. They don't have anyone who's approximating an NHL forward except maybe Lockwood. And that's kind of the result of, Berenson hangs on for a long time. There's a lot of uncertainty. So you have kids like a 20-year-old guy from like an overager who didn't even score very much who comes in and is a really important part of the team. And that's Garrett Van Wy, who's a great player, great fourth liner. But that fourth line is kind of their second line. Mm-hmm. So that's not good. And it's going to be a couple years here, because the way college hockey recruiting works is Michigan is now recruiting like 15-year-olds. So like it takes them a while to actually get on campus. The 2020 class is when it's like the first real like male class, which is crazy because this is his second year and there's like another year before his first real recruiting class happens. So it's just going to be – I just want to hit fast forward on the program because they need more talent than they have right now, and that's going to be – going to take a minute.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, they're a 500 team and they struggled in – it's what they're going to be this year, and unless they get real hot in the Big Ten tournament, that's it. They're out of the NCAAs this year.
Yeah, I do want to – this is not a Michigan question, just a general question. What kind of pro do you guys think Kyler Murray's going to be?
If he goes to the right place.
Yeah, no, I think so many of these prospects, it's about what system they get into, who their coaching is. I mean, is Josh Rosen as bad as he was last year? Yeah, I don't think he's that bad. I don't think he's.
Do you think Kyler Murray is a top 10 NFL draft pick? I mean, do you think?
Depends. Aren't the Cardinals taking him at number one? Shipping Rosen out? Isn't that the latest rumor?
I mean,
Kingsbury came out and said Rosen is our guy after the rumor started.
Oh, after all that stuff?
You know, if I'm there at number five and I'm the Detroit Lions, I'll take a swing.
He's a 5'9 quarterback.
Yeah, I thought he was 5'7. No, 5'9. He's all the way 5'9.
He's 5'9 and 3 quarters.
He's taller than Juwan
out of
Morgan.
Oklahoma. Yeah.
That's
he
all
measured
I know.
In socks at 5'9 and like three quarters.
I know, but like
so that's shorter than Russell Wilson. That's shorter than Drew Brees. That's shorter than Baker Mayfield.
But like if you put him in the Oklahoma-ish system, it'll work. Like he's just never have a tight end, never have a fullback. Just go and play it like that and see what happens.
But who's going to do that right now in the NFL?
I don't know. The Chiefs?
Dude, someone's going to take a chance.
The Chiefs
high upside
not
quarterback.
Not the Chiefs, but like the Chiefs.
Right. And you know, this came up because in the Free Press this morning, there was the columnist was like, take Kyler Murray with number 8. And he used Patrick Mahomes is, he's 6'3". With an otherworldly arm that can throw exceptionally accurately on the move.
He was also relatively overlooked in that draft, right? I mean, I know Kansas City had to trade up to 10-ish to get him. But
Kyler Murray is like also Mike Vick, right? Like he is that athletic. He is that fast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be negated a little bit when you're against NFL defenses.
It didn't negate it for Mike Vick. Like
Mike Vick was I would say
he's
Mike
a much
faster
bigger
than him, bigger
no,
and faster.
I mean, he's bigger, but he's not faster.
I think he was faster.
Really? What's he going to time out in the 40?
We'll see. I don't think he'll
4.3.
I have to look up what Mike Vick.
He ran faster than Juwan Morgan.
No, I mean, I today's show right there, folks. Juwan Morgan is a legit
at his pro day. He did a 4.33.
He did a 4.33. Wow. Okay. Vic did 4.33.
Vic did a 4.33.
Oh, okay. Kyler Murray is 4.33. Dude,
right, you don't think he's 4.33?
I don't think he's 4.33.
I give him a chance to be sub.
He's also 25 pounds stronger or thicker than Murray, right. And that's one of my concerns. He was 3 inches taller and 25 pounds.
Quarterbacks don't get hit in the NFL anymore.
Lions, unless the Lions need to take deep.
Depends on your line.
What NFL are you watching, dude?
They throw a flag whenever you touch them.
Okay, I got you on that.
Better than us?
No!